Welcome to The Crucible, where the Southern African Institute of Mining and Metallurgy gives you a front row seat to conversations with specialists in the minerals and metals sector. SIAM has well over 100 years' experience in and commitment to protecting the professional standards of our industry. Join us now as we discuss the key issues and global initiatives to give you the relevant information needed to make informed decisions, to influence policy that directly affects our sector, and to help our industry grow in an uncertain future.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Nomsa Mbeka-Nmet, and I have the pleasure of moderating today's podcast on a critical and timely theme, Leading Beyond Boundaries, the Impact of Women in Leadership Roles. I'm a partner at Weber Wenzel and a member of the ESG Committee for SIAM, and also a member of the SIAM ESG Committee's Gender Equity Alliance Subcommittee. Our goal today is to delve into some of the key challenges women face in leadership roles, the unique contribution they make to decision-making processes, and importantly, how men can leverage their privilege and influence to support efforts towards greater gender diversity and equity in leadership. I'm really thrilled to be joined by Prelisha and Mark, who bring a wealth of experience and knowledge to this conversation. Their insight on this topic will undoubtedly add immense value to all of us today. To kick things off, I would like to invite Prelisha and Mark to introduce themselves and share why this topic resonates with them personally.
Prelisha. Thanks, Nomsa. Pleasure to be here. As Nomsa had indicated, my name is Prelisha Singh, and I'm a partner at Weber Wenzel. I'm also a member of our management board and the head of the public law department. I'm also a mother of two young daughters. This topic resonates with me deeply as I have walked a long journey in corporate South Africa, starting 20 plus years ago as a junior and now considered, surprisingly by some, as a leader. And I know that this journey is of utmost importance to attract women into corporate roles and to keep women in corporate roles through the various seasons of their life. And I play quite a seminal role as a leader at Weber Wenzel, and I've been under the mentorship and leadership of many during my journey. And hence, I have a lot to share and a lot to learn on this topic.
Mark?
Thank you, yes. Now, I'm Mark Monroe, CTO, Chief Technical Officer at Implats. So, I mean, my background being coming from the mines in the Free State, very male-dominated environment, a rough environment. When I look at that environment I grew up in, and I think about the future, it cannot be the same. The past cannot be the same as the future. And therefore, if I envisage a different future, I believe I have to play my part in creating that future. It won't just happen. If I do nothing, we will stay where we are, and that past that I grew up in will be the future for my children. And I do not accept that. And therefore, I believe we should all get very active in changing the status quo, in changing the way society operates, how it values people, so that we create a better future for ourselves.
Great. Well, Prelisha, can you share some key experiences or challenges you've faced as a woman in leadership roles? How have these experiences shaped your approach to leadership?
The language of leadership role is quite interesting with the use of the term. And I say this to some of my juniors currently, that I believe that we are actually all leaders. If we work in teams at various different hierarchical levels, either we report to someone or we oversee someone else. And so there's this idea that leadership role sits only at the top end of the pyramid or at the hierarchy in any structure. And I think that's a flawed assumption. Interestingly, I think I've been a leader from a very young age. I would date it right back to probably primary school, where you are class captains and prefects and the like. And so the journey has been long in terms of when I reflected on this. And so the experiences and challenges were different along the journey. But I've taken away some of the more key experiences for purposes of this discussion. And the first thing I reflected on is that sometimes you are an identified leader, and sometimes you're an unexpected leader, and including a reluctant leader. And in circumstances, I want people to acknowledge that they might not come into leadership voluntarily, and that especially women in the workplace where there might be fewer, you are going to be probably an unexpected leader to many. And so it's to be open to that possibility and open to that role and I think embrace it. Unfortunately, I say that to some of my juniors who are just like, why are people asking me these questions? I'm like, because you're a leader. And they are quite surprised by the appellation all of a sudden. They're like, but I'm still so young. I said, no, but you have something to share. So the first thing is that being led and then being open to being a leader, I think are two important things that I want women in all roles in corporate SA to embrace. And for me, it was very important to determine and pitch the level of leadership and the role that I foresaw in the relationship. And the reason I say that is because often we're not trained formally in leadership roles until quite late in the journey. And I've said this to some of the more junior leaders as they come up. I think that we need earlier training because what I had to learn over the journey is how to pitch the leadership role. And I say this because my instinct and personality is to fix and to go in there to solve. And I had to learn through some bad experiences as a leader that that is not necessarily your role. And I have now said to people, I'm not your therapist. I'm not your mother. And in some instances, I'm not even your friend. I am now here to guide and give you my experiences to challenge you and to be challenged in that role. So the first thing that guided and through a few good and bad experiences, pitching the leadership role and pitching the leadership relationship appropriately, because I feel that can sometimes get a bit messy if not done appropriately. So that's the first significant experience that shaped how I approach leadership relationships. The more formal ones, I'll actually have a discussion with them to say those very things. I'm not here to fix, I'm not here to solve, I'm not here as your mother, I'm not here as your friend. I'm here as almost in a mentorship capacity to guide, to impart experience. And I think another key thing for me is the symbiotic nature of leadership roles. And I have told some that I lead that I am actually here to be challenged as well, challenge some of the views. And I think that has become increasingly important as I crossed over into the 40s, where the 20-year-olds that I now lead look at me as very ancient, gut-wrenching, and then distant from their experiences. And so I say, please educate me, enlighten me, so that I too can learn and I too can be challenged, because some of my experiences and some of my guidance is steeped in a different time. And I think importantly, it's to be quite agile in the leadership role and open to being wrong, to being challenged, to adapting your leadership style for the context and for the role.
Yeah, it's funny you should say I'll pick up the reluctant leader. Because, I mean, I think I've in my work, I've been that reluctant leader. And it's shocked me how many young women in particular are looking for role models that look like them in particular. So, and it's something that I guess when I was growing up, I never actually thought I needed a role model. But I find
that you were going to be.
I was going to be. So it's funny that now we're having to be, these are the things in female leadership, we're having to grapple with being that reluctant leader. And whether you like it or not, you're just put in that position. Now, turning to you, Mark, men hold a significant privilege and influence in many spaces. How can they effectively use this to support gender diversity and equity in leadership?
No, thank you. Yes. Well, I'm privileged yet to be joined by two very smart women. Our industry is still male dominated, so I think it is incumbent on the men in industry and in society to recognize that they must do something about it. If you don't recognize it, you will not do anything about it, and you will not use your privilege, and recognizing that you have the privilege, you will not use it to change the status quo. So I think the first thing men must do is just recognize that things need to change and recognize that it is you that needs to change it. Power is skewed and slanted towards you, towards the males, simply because there are more of them in these power positions. So I think once you've recognized that you have to do something, step one is tell people that you're going to do something about it. In other words, just be vocal about it. Mm-hmm. So there's not a secret. We're not going to secretly transform society. Mm-hmm. We are very open about it, that it's going to change, and tomorrow things will be done different. So be vocal, stand up, challenge the sexist remarks that your colleagues might make. Just call them on it sometimes. And it's not a negative. We have grown up in this society that is biased towards, let's say, males, let's say maybe white males, maybe even middle-aged white males. It's biased. So you have to recognize that and call it. So even with all the good intentions, I recognize that sometimes I might say things that are just not appropriate for the situation. It's not a bad thing that someone calls me on and just says, Mark, that's maybe not right the way you're saying it. You know how we look at it from a woman context or something. I say, oh, okay, thanks. No, I didn't recognize that. Thank you. Yes, I have a bias. And then once you're very vocal about it, mentor and support. Because as you were speaking about role models, you must do it. It's work. It's not always just natural and people will look at you. You actually have to go out there and get some people and help them and sponsor them and mentor them and coach them. It's an active process. It's not a passive process. It's a very active process. You get informal and formal sponsorships and mentorships and coaching sessions. But you have to think about it, decide you're going to do it, and go out and specifically do it. And then people think that all the policies, procedures, and practices are in place in our society to change it. And they're not necessary. I very strongly believe that we have focused on neutralizing our policies, practices, and procedures to a large extent. However, if you just neutralize the environment and make it gender neutral, it'll take extremely long time to change the way we do things. So you actually have to bias your policies and standards and procedures and work practices to the other side to bring about an equal footing. So you must think about very carefully how you specifically tailor your training practices, your training procedures, your selection policies and procedures, simply how you give out bursaries and things like that. Consider those things, and then your workplace. I mean, especially in mining, it's a rough workplace. It's uncomfortable for men. It's uncomfortable for women. Now, let's go about fixing that. Let's make it comfortable for everyone. And then encourage equitable participation. And given, I mean, we're in the mining industry and we're talking about that, or legal mineral resource industry. But society is the same as our industry. Mm-hmm. It is dominated by males. So when I get a young graduate or a young mine overseer in a team, she won't necessarily speak up if there's four other men in the group. She'll be quiet. Why? Because that's how she was taught when she was 10 or 5 around the Christmas tree or whatever. So she's taught that. So how do you undo that? You have to recognize these things, be aware of it, and it doesn't come natural. You have to walk in there specifically, look, see who's participating, not participating. And then as a man with the power or a senior person in the room, recognize this and then encourage equitable participation. In other words, make space for that person to come out of their shell and step up and speak. And it's sometimes just quieting some of the other noise. And then obviously lead by example. I must embarrassingly say that there's not many men that have this view that they need to change the society. Some genuinely believe it's quite fine. We can carry on like this.
Because and, it works, you know, with, for them.
Yeah, you know, it works. It works. It works for us. I mean, exactly. Not them, us. It's good.
I'm othering you.
It's not sustainable. It's going to crumble one day. So those that do believe in changing the society must show it, do it, and stand up and lead by that example in what you do. And mustn't be shy about it, eh? And then support women's networks and initiatives. So someone was asking me, Mark, why are you going to this? Hey? You know, this woman in mining talks. You're a white male. I mean, you're actually sort of suicide, isn't it? Don't you feel a bit out amongst all these women? They say, yeah, it's not a natural place for me. I promise you that. But it is important to support these women networks, grow them, make them strong in themselves so that they can challenge the status quo themselves. Mm-hmm. Eh? So even if I can't do it, these networks, as they become stronger and these initiatives, they will shift society's views.
Mm. Yeah.
Challenge the traditional norms.
Can I just pick up on that, if you don't mind? Because I think women's issues have become women echo chambers, and I think that's the danger. Yeah. And the question Nomsa has asked is especially related to the role of men.
Yes.
And it's brilliant that you feel uncomfortable but are still willing to do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the role that men have to play here. Not everyone wants it. No one actually really wants change if it works very well for them.
Yes. Mm.
And
yes.
to say that you started by saying this is not a future you want necessarily for your children and other generations to come. And so even though that you would rather probably leave it to Nomsa and I to have the podcast alone, it will actually only work with the involvement of men.
Mm.
It otherwise will come unstuck.
Mm.
Because by definition, if there's a power imbalance in our society, the power rests by, let's say, males.
Mm.
So you're not going to get it unless I agree to relinquish it and to show you how to use the power and how to get the power.
Yeah.
And to get the buy-in of other men. Unfortunately, what I've seen is that we have these discussions at Weber Wenzel, we have these women talks, and we don't even brand it as only, you know, women-only invitees. Yeah. Yet the attendance by men is very poor.
Mm.
And we've now had to encourage to say, actually, we need more men to attend. Because women know their issues very well.
Yes.
We don't
you can't
need
to tell yourself you have a problem.
We know the problem.
Yes.
So we need the men to see the problem.
It's very important. And when I look at the women in mining get-togethers, and I think, are they just talking amongst themselves or actually changing the society?
Mm-hmm.
You say, well, do they have the power and authority and even skill to change the design of the society, the structure?
Mm.
No, it doesn't sit there now. Mm. That's why we're having this discussion, because it didn't sit there.
Mm.
We have
and
to change it.
The use of relinquish was very interesting, because I think people have gotten very PC in the way we discuss this, the role of women, leadership by women, women-led business. But that idea and the conflict constantly arises. Why? And it's because of that resistance and the relinquishing of the power. I do like that, because I've not seen it as I have not really phrased it as hostile as that.
Mm.
And people might not be actively conceiving of it as hostile as that, but it actually is.
Mm. Mm.
And until there's this ability to overcome the threat of neutralizing and that there's not going to be, well, there might be a loss on the other side, but that loss is actually going to better society to come.
Mm.
And that's very hard.
But it shouldn't be a loss. So it's not a set amount of power around the table or authority around the table. I actually very strongly believe maybe in the old days and in immature environments, people fought for authority and power. I think when you look at it under a more transformed approach, a modern approach, the more I give power away, the more powerful I actually become.
I think so.
And that is quite important, that in the modern society, the more you network, you give away, you empower, the more strength you actually get.
I just want to pick up on something that you said just briefly, calling other people on inappropriate remarks. I think there's two ways you can look at it, is that the one calling out, I think sometimes you need to call it with grace as well, because sometimes the hostility of calling it out may push people. They won't say anything, but that doesn't mean that they've transformed.
Exactly.
They just do it quietly. Yeah. So it's just doing it with grace, and then understanding that we come from a patriarchal society, and so all these inappropriateness or whatever you may call them come from way back in our cultures and in our, you know, homes. So you won't end them in the workplace.
No.
You may start, but it is a journey. And I think there's a lot of calling out where people actually shut up and don't say anything, but it's not changing them at all.
Just on that, I think that what I've been saying to people is have the hard conversation. So people are over to PC also when they call out. You don't have to get defensive. But as you said, you can't really challenge a person's very deeply entrenched and conditioned views from childhood with just saying that. Then they'll be like, I don't want to actually go to a meeting with Mark. Exactly.
Yeah.
And this idea of have the hard conversation and say, well, why do you say that? Why do you think it's wrong?
Mm.
And just to share an example, we've been trying to limit our male colleagues' complimenting of female appearance in the office. And this was not received very well. And my line to some of them is just don't say anything or have an equal opportunistic approach. Compliment a man and compliment a woman. And so I've said, if you are able to compliment a man and feel comfortable doing so, then I feel you have no predisposition to complimenting. And it wasn't received very well. And somebody said, I was just not going to say anything anymore. I said, no, let's understand why.
Yeah.
And it actually took a few conversations. And so now we get, can we say this? And I thought, well, that's progress.
It is progress. Hey? And it just shows you that naivety. I think it would be weird. Obviously, you're working in a nice building in Johannesburg. If I go out to the barn and I tell a fellow Shabbos, you have nice hair, I like it would be a challenge. So, yeah, you got to be sensitive about these things. And then just shifting the conversation. Like, if we get together and we're talking about rugby or race cars, when we joined with a woman, we should consider that and adjust the conversation accordingly. Now, how do we have an all-encompassing social conversation around the coffee machine? Because that's where a lot of conversations happen, because they will be dominated by what interests you. And quite frankly, we must admit, what interests you is different than what interests me.
Yeah.
So how are we going to change it to encourage to everyone to speak up, participate, and not feel left out of the clique or the group?
And what we've said to people, because I had it in response to a question later, insofar as giving advice to women in male-dominated industries and how to then be inclusive. And it's interesting because we often get that, and it's layered. You know, it's layered at the level of age, at the level of race, at the level of gender, at the level of sex. Yes. It's complicated. And often what I've now done in meetings is where, for example, I grew up, you know, not in a society that went to polo matches, but I often find myself in meetings where people are now talking about polo. And I immediately stop to say, I actually don't play polo. And I ask a junior, what did you do this weekend? Or you know, what sports interests you? So we can still keep it in the sport genre, but we ask and include way. Yes. Because the person might turn around and say, I love rugby or I love polo. Mm. And everyone gets shocked. And I think I've had those, which I love as well. But we also, in the genre, I do then ask a question because you want that person and that grouping to feel comfortable about speaking about rugby and the other grouping to feel comfortable speaking about whatever. And somebody once told me in a meeting, I don't play polo and I don't own guns, because that was the conversation. I said, me neither.
Now, moving along and then asking you an interesting next question is there the role of mentorship and sponsorship? How has that been in your journey, Pralisha?
Critical. It is absolutely critical. And it must be addressed, though, in a sensitive way. And I say that because for me, I thought it was a very natural thing that I needed formal and informal mentors. I sought them out. I organically developed some. Others, I inorganically just pounced on them and made them my mentors. But I had a junior once, and she challenged me on that because I said to her, I think you need a sponsor. And it was a young female of color, and she thought that was quite offensive. She said to me, why don't you think I can make it here on my own? I don't need to be sponsored.
Sure.
And I had to walk away and take that experience and say to her, you know, and have the conversation as to what do you think I was relaying to you, and unpack it, that it's not because I don't believe that you will be successful. It's because I think you will be successful that I do think you can benefit from a mentorship relationship. So interestingly, if people are aspiring to share that wisdom, I found that I had to also approach it quite delicately. I know, I was shocked.
I'll be shocked as well.
I know. She was quite upset by the thought.
That's,
and it wasn't because I said,
right?
It was very interesting. And I remember it today. It happened about a decade ago. But for me, it created a sense of ease in the workplace, which took a while. I didn't grow up in corporate SA. I didn't come from a family of anyone who worked in corporate South Africa. And so having a mentor who created space, who encouraged me, who shared perspectives and really forced me, and I actually do that now, forced me to speak up in meetings where I had so much to say and then after the fact would be sharing quietly to say, just say one thing. In the next meeting, just say one thing. And I have a lot to say. Generally, as Nomsa knows very well. And so it was just for me to then get a person who had familiarity in the environment and to share experience and create a safer space for me to come into the environment. Unfortunately, you know, I think at the time, and you said it was something to do with the past, is there was a level of assimilation that I think my generation had to do in corporate SA. And now the juniors are challenging that because they don't necessarily want to assimilate. And I think that is interesting in my journey on mentorship to now understand what, you know, and how they can present themselves more authentically.
It's interesting because sponsorship, I mean, we thought about sponsorship and the whole point is that in this male-dominated mining sector, you'd think that sponsorship would be very valuable. You are showing them the ropes, you are bringing them front of center to leadership, and you are guiding them through that. You are not saying that they're incapable of doing it on their own. You're just saying this is a male environment and this is a society that we live in. And it's helpful to have somebody who actually champions you in all lead, you know, in all senior positions, that will take you to meetings, that just will introduce it in general,
And I think it's important as an additional thing around how it impacted me, and it relates to something you'd mentioned earlier, seeking out sponsors and mentors who look like you. Now, when I arrived in corporate SA, there wasn't many sponsors and mentors who looked like me. And I actually found it quite invaluable to get sponsors and mentors who didn't look like me. And to then have that completely different perspective and experience. And interesting, and that's why I call it the symbiotic relationship to date, because they learned a lot from me. I still have those mentors 20 plus years later. And so for women seeking out mentorship relationships now, I do say to them, find people who look like you as well as those who very much do not, because I believe they are valuable on both fronts.
Yeah. Mark, I think we've addressed unconscious bias. I don't know if there's more that you'd like to speak to that on.
Look, I think the one point, I just want to emphasize that we all have unconscious bias. That's what's called unconscious, because we don't know we have it. We must first admit that we have it. We're raised a certain way. Hey?
Whether
it's you dress in certain colors, or I like blue shirts or whatever, and you don't, I will then assimilate to people wearing blue shirts. It's normal. If there's a braai, first of all, it's a braai, hey? So the vegetarians are excluded.
I'm vegan.
and so it just goes on and on and on. Now, we must recognize we have these things in our past. They're not bad or good, but they can damage society if they become dominant and it's dysfunctional. So be aware of where your hidden beliefs are, your unconscious bias, and then do something about it to make sure they don't harm society. We can all have bias. I mean, I'm biased to drinking coffee, and you're biased towards drinking tea. That's just great. But where I do certain things that will harm you or harm your future or harm society, that's not good. We have to recognize it, identify it, and actively work about it. It's not good enough to just recognize it. You must do something. When you get out of bed in the morning, say, when I go to bed, this will be slightly changed in the environment I work in. Then I've achieved something and moved society forward. And that's quite critical.
So what advice would you give to women who are looking to rise in the leadership position in the mining sector?
I think, first of all, there is still the sense of entitlement, and maybe it's one of those layers of biasness that I do think some of the youth, they believe they must just get things, this entitlement. Maybe that's a bias view, I don't know.
Think about it tonight.
When I was young, I thought about that as well. I must just now move up and do things. So first of all, whether you're a man, woman, or anybody, you better become the expert in what you do. And that's the first differentiator, because I will not give you half a chance as a woman or male if you are not good at what you're doing and passionate about what you're doing. So if I sense that you're expecting something from me or mentorship or guidance just because you're a woman, you are wrong. You get in that door because you are expert and good, and I see something else. So it comes, develop those skills, eh? And if you are at a disadvantage because of your gender, well, I suppose all the more reason to make sure you have a good, solid skill set. Be confident and assertive without being aggressive. Build that network. I think we've spoken about the network, the mentorship, the coaching. And then seek out leadership opportunities, places where you can practice. So, yes, if you fail at work, it's going to be embarrassing. It might stick with you for a year or two. But then why don't you join the running club and practice your leadership at the running club? And there it's a bit less stressful. It won't impact your career. You can always change running clubs if you do something wrong. But practice your leadership in other environments. So when the chips are down at work, you're really good at it. Huh? Seek out those leadership opportunities, work, environment, home as well, huh? For yourself. Why must I stand up for you when you won't stand up for yourself, when you won't set up that framework in which this is what's special about you? Then I can't do it because you haven't given me the tools to help you. And then embrace challenges. You know, there are many challenges. Don't cry, don't back off, and don't pull the gender card or race card. Embrace them. It's a learning opportunity when someone does trip you because you're going to get up a lot stronger. So, yeah, don't go look out for the challenges. But when they hit you, embrace them, beat them, and come out the other side.
And Prilisha, have you got anything to add to that?
Yes, I think that you need to understand why you want to be a leader. We spoke earlier about reluctant leaders, and those are those role models who people seek out, and you are then, in their mind's eye, a leader. But someone asked me, because I'm part of a formal mentorship program in addition to the million informal mentors, why do you want to do this? And you have to be quite clear as to the purpose that you wish to serve. For me, it is, I call it the essence of service and giving back in a way that I benefited from. But this idea of women aspiring to leadership roles, sometimes I ask them, like, why do you want to do this? Mm-hmm. And you have to be very clear in your mind why you want to do it. And then I do believe there's a combination of formal leadership training that we require. Mm-hmm. There's, I think, a conflation of things that if you're good at your job, so subject matter expert, then naturally you're going to be a good leader. And I don't think so. And I call it the Sia Khaleesi effect, in that I just think he is the most amazing leader in bringing that team together. But he might not necessarily be the best player on that team, but his leadership skills are streaks above. And I think people conflate the two. So subject matter experts are needed in business, of course, but not everyone from that pool need become a leader. We need to identify leaders who have actual leadership skills or the base that we can harness. And so when we say women aspiring to leadership positions, I do think there needs to be the step back as to understand why you want to do it. Do you have the skills? And if you think you need enhanced skills, I do believe training is important. We need to be sending out these leaders to proper courses and programs. There's a lot on job that you need to learn, and I think that's necessary, context specific. But the actual tutelage, I do believe there's a level of education that we do need of our leaders. And as you said, expect that you're going to meet challenges. You must actually be ready to be challenged as a leader and then challenge others as a leader. And I think you need to do it, I think, with a measure of grace and know that it's going to be a very difficult journey. I tell those aspirant leaders, it's not an easy road. So if you're choosing this now, know that you might just want to sit and bill in the law firm. That might be a bit easier than choosing the leadership journey. And so I also encourage those leaders to seek out mentors as well, because I think that we all need to constantly learn. And there's no like arrival point for leaders. And again, it goes back to those female leaders need to aspire to have both male and female mentors.
As we end this conversation, any last words from you, Mark?
Nothing, thank you. Us three being around the table here having this chat, I think that'll shift the dial a little bit, get out there. And I think we need to encourage more such conversations. Such conversations need to happen in the workplace. They need to happen underground, in the mines, all over in society, and coming up with new ideas, recognizing the challenges, recognizing that it's imperative that we do change and we do create the better future we so desperately need and want.
And what about you,
Prilisha? No, similarly, I think I get challenged by our juniors sometimes in the sense that we haven't come far enough. And I laugh and I say, can you imagine where we were 30 years ago if you think we are not far enough now? And I feel their anger. I do believe we have probably not gotten as far as we would have wanted to have come, or that they believe we should be at. But there's a recognition that we wouldn't even be sitting around this table now if there hadn't been strides made by women and male leaders, but an acknowledgement that there's so much more to do and achieve. And I hope that these types of conversations pave the way for that, you know, evolution in the long run. I hope that our children, Mark, will benefit from a more equal society.
Well, thank you very much, both of you, and it's been a really inspiring and exhilarating sort of conversation. So we hope to have more of these conversations.
Indeed.
Great.
Thank you, and have a good afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Please note that the facts and opinions expressed are those of the individual and do not reflect the position of SIAEM or the corporate institution.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.